Would it not be incongruous if the United Nations were to advance the course of democratic liberty everywhere and yet prevent self-government from taking root in the very city where the democratic ideal was born? Seen in this light, Jerusalem appears above all other cities as a place where democratic institutions most appropriately belong. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 208, Abba Ibn and Jewish Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It is an oft-quoted sarcastic quip from Abba Ibn describing the United Nations. If Algeria introduced a resolution declaring that the earth was flat and that Israel had flattened it, it would pass by a vote of 164 to 13 with 26 abstentions. If anyone would know the nature of this international body and its antagonism to Israel, it was Abba Ibn, who became the first Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. There he put his intellectual and linguistic gifts to good use. Asaf Sinever, in his biography of Ibn, cites an Israeli paper that sang Ibn's praises, writing, quote, "He is without doubt one of the most talented individuals in our foreign service. He is the master of languages, not only English, French, German, etc. He is an internationally renowned scholar of Arabic and Farsi, and he is only in his 30s. He supersedes many of our diplomatic representatives." End quote. These gifts were made manifest in January of 1950, when the young Israeli ambassador addressed a United Nations Special Committee whose president had recommended an internationalization of Jerusalem. In response, Abba Ibn delivered remarks that, like Ben-Gurion's on the same subject, deserve to be rediscovered, especially as we prepare to celebrate this week the reunification of Jerusalem. Ibn's eloquent address had many elements. We will focus on two. One theme was similar to that of Ben-Gurion's presentation, a reminder to the United Nations that while it had endorsed an international Jerusalem, it did nothing as the Arab armies descended on the Jews of the city and the Holy Land in general. Abba Ibn said, quote, "The juridical effect of these events was that the Jerusalem area lost its mandatory government on 14 May and that the General Assembly simultaneously decided not to confer any other international capacity upon it. It was not a passive default, but an active relinquishment of responsibility in a critical hour. The moral implications are even greater. The General Assembly knew that, failing a tangible assertion of its interest in Jerusalem, military invasion from the neighboring states would converge upon the Holy City and overwhelm its besieged and isolated Jewish population." End quote. Abba Ibn then went on to explain to the UN the dangers to which it had consigned Jerusalem's Jews and how only the Jews of the Holy Land saved Jerusalem's Jewish population, and went on to create a vibrant capital of Israel. Quote, "The Jews of Jerusalem, engulfed in death and famine, fighting against dire odds for sheer survival itself, had little time to reflect on the deliberations of those who had promised them security, well-being, peace, and order but 5 months ago. The Security Council, the Trusteeship Council, and the General Assembly had left them no room for misunderstanding. Their alternative was now clear. They must either sit back, paralyzed and inert, while military conquest, anarchy, and starvation engulf their homes, or they must summon up their own energies to fight for their homes and their future at Israel's side." They chose the latter course. When their prospect of survival hung on a thread, at a time when parents wondered if they would see their children wither from famine before their eyes, the lifeline thrown from the State of Israel reached the beleaguered city. On the first trucks of the convoys reaching the city with water and food were inscribed the Hebrew words, "If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget its cunning." The people of Jerusalem were not forsaken or alone. Once bare survival was assured and the siege heroically broken, there began a rehabilitation which has sustained its momentum ever since. In that process, a relationship grew up between the State of Israel and Jewish Jerusalem, which has now reached full and organic integration. It is a relationship of duty and sacrifice, of mutual responsibility and common aspiration. And Ibn added a bit later, "Jerusalem was spiritually darkened by a sense of solitude, insecurity, and neglect. The government of Israel made it the scene of the most solemn and historic moments celebrating the deliverance of Israel and Jerusalem alike. Thus, the swift withdrawal of the United Nations from direct governmental responsibility and the advance of the government of Israel towards the assumption of that responsibility were parallel and simultaneous. Every chance had been given for the United Nations to assume its responsibility and authority. When the opportunity had been irretrievably cast away and further hesitation would have spelled destruction, the vacuum of security and law was swiftly and permanently filled." End quote. Thus did Ibn make clear to the United Nations that Israel owed the international community nothing because it had done nothing for Israel, even as the Arab armies had sought to destroy the very Jewish state that the United Nations vote had endorsed, and that the UN had done nothing, as Jerusalem's Jews were consigned to besiegement and assault. But the most interesting element of Ibn's speech pertained to Israel's guarantee that in Jewish Jerusalem, every faith would have access to to sites in Jerusalem sacred to it. One striking passage in his presentation parallels, to my mind, Disraeli's famous speech to Parliament during the debate over allowing Jews to sit in that representative body. Disraeli essentially spoke about what Western civilization owed Judaism. Here, as part of his presentation, even asked the Christian world to consider what a vibrant Jewish Jerusalem could signify in the present. Ibn said that, quote, "I am aware that there are some throughout the Christian world who still sincerely doubt whether the destiny of modern Jerusalem as the center of Israel's independence can be harmonized with Jerusalem's universal mission," end quote. The young ambassador went on to argue that it was precisely in a flourishing capital of a Jewish state that the universal aspect of Jerusalem would also be revealed, saying that, quote, "Only a city alive with movement and ideas could have attracted to its midst the searching minds and spirits who generalized transient events into abiding truths. Prophecy and spiritual searchings have never flourished in a museum. They only arise out of the issues and dilemmas of life. The spiritual heritage which has gone forth from Jerusalem is historically linked with its character as a political center and with the ancient people who established Jerusalem on what was an obscure Jebusite hill. Surely any sensitive religious insight cannot fail to see some grandeur in the restoration of this people to the city which its own experience rendered famous in the world," end quote. Ibn, in other words, argued that it is a resurrected Jewish Jerusalem that could serve as a moral and spiritual beacon. And today, there are many Christians that have blessed Israel with their friendship who see in Jewish Jerusalem precisely such a beacon. Ibn went on to argue that, quote, "The spiritual ideals conceived in Jerusalem are the moral basis on which modern democracy rests. Would it not be incongruous if the United Nations were to advance the course of democratic liberty everywhere and yet prevent self-government from taking root in the very city where the democratic ideal was born? Seen in this light, Jerusalem appears above all other cities as a place where democratic institutions most appropriately belong," end quote. And in describing a free city that was at the epicenter of Israel and its capital, Ibn said, quote, "Perhaps in this, as in other critical periods of history, a free Jerusalem may proclaim redemption to mankind," end quote. It is a fascinating and eloquent address. And if the speech's predecessor was one given by Disraeli, its successor can be found in the Nobel Peace Prize address of Menachem Begin in the late 1970s, when Begin both reminded the world that it had done little to save the Jewish people during the 20th century, and that it was the prophets of Hebrew scripture, such as Isaiah in Jerusalem, that gave the concept of world peace to the world. Abba Ibn's effectiveness in the United Nations led to his being asked to also serve simultaneously as Israel's ambassador to Washington. Asaf Sinover tells us that, quote, "On September 15, 1950, Ibn arrived at the White House to present his credentials to President Truman. Mindful of protocol and dressed formally in a morning suit and a black Hamburg hat, Ibn was ready to deliver his carefully prepared statement. But as he entered the Oval Office, his nerves gave way to surprise. The President of the United States sat behind his desk, wearing a plain white shirt and no jacket, with glaringly red suspenders and a pair of two-tone brown and white shoes. If you passed him in the street of a small town," Ibn later recalled, "you would imagine that he was on the way to an office in a central part of a moderately sized building. If there was such a thing as an imperial presidency, nobody had broken the news to Harry S. Truman of Independence, Missouri," end quote. So Ibn first experienced President Truman. But Ibn, we are told, suddenly realized that this man was actually an embodiment of American might. Sinover tells us that Ibn later reflected, quote, "It occurred to me that I was sitting a few yards away from the most powerful leader in the history of mankind, more powerful than the Babylonian and Persian emperors, than Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, Napoleon, the rulers of the British Empire at its zenith, or the Russian and German dictators of the 20th century," end quote. Ibn would represent Israel in both Washington and the UN until he was elevated to an even more senior foreign policy position. But his speech before his promotion in the United Nations deserves to also be remembered for the way in which he spoke on behalf of Israel to the world, and for the way in which he sought to remind the world what Jewish Jerusalem should mean to them. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.